You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Dean Millard and Guy Flaming on Edmonton Sports Leader, TSN 1260.
Welcome back to The Pipeline Show. I'm Guy Flaming. He's Dean Millard. And over there is Hernan Salas. This is The Pipeline Show. All right, what we're going to do here with Ryan Jesse, we're going to take player A, player B, kind of, as we said before the break, throw it's like Thunderdome. Put them both in. Two men enter, one man leaves. Ryan Jesse gets to be the judge. Who would you draft between player A and player B? We're going to do that with five or six pairs of players, including one of the players we'll talk about is this fella from the Mississauga Steelheads.
We can have a quick halt there. To Nylander. Wrister score! What a shot. You are not going to sit there and tell me that this guy is not going to be a future NHLer. That is unbelievable.
That was Alex Nylander in action for the Mississauga Steelheads, as we're joined now by Ryan Jesse from HockeyProspect.com. How are you, Ryan?
I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. And by the way, quick congratulations on the Black Book. Once again, it's so in-depth, it's ridiculous. And it's become the bar. The bar has been set every year, and you guys keep raising the bar. So congratulations to everybody at HockeyProspect.com for this one.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a pretty tough grind from about March when the OHL draft stuff starts to come up. We get that stuff out, and then it's straight Black Book. So we're kind of juggling the playoffs and communicating with guys, setting up meetings, and getting this Black Book done. So it's a real grind, but it feels great when it comes out.
Well, let's talk about it. We're going to jump right into it and compare a couple of guys. And since we led off with an Alex Nylander clip, might as well go with the comparison we're going to do with Alex Nylander and his line mate in Mikey McLeod, both of them from the Mississauga Steelheads. And as I said, they play on the same line. Tell me what the difference is between these guys, maybe the different roles they play on the line, and who you like more long-term and why.
Yeah, Alex Nylander, what I really like about him is his playmaking ability. They both have good speed. McLeod's a little bit bigger. He's a little more physical, but Nylander's a great playmaker. He has great vision. He has a good shot on him. So he's that kind of guy who can be a real threat, whether he's dishing the puck off or if he's shooting. He's got speed down the wing. He can beat defenders. So I like his high-end potential more than McLeod's. Now, one of the things that Nylander lacks is that competitiveness, that physicality, that consistency to compete for the puck. And McLeod is a lot more of a physical guy. He's going to bang you around a lot more. He's going to put a lot more pressure on you on the forecheck. So that's where McLeod has his strengths. The difference with McLeod is offensively, he's hot and cold. He'll have flashes where you just see brilliance and you see top six upside, and then he'll just go quiet for a while. He'll struggle to make plays, and I think part of it might be hockey sense with him. I think Nylander's a bit of a smarter player, so I think at the end of the day, when you look at those two Mississauga prospects, I think Nylander's definitely going to get the edge.
Which guy do you, when you look at, Nylander has probably a higher-end skill aspect, as you talked about. Which guy do you think survives longer in the NHL?
I would still stick with Nylander just because I think he has more offensive potential. I think Nylander's the kind of guy that might be able to hang in there in a lesser role. He's got more of a chance of being an effective bottom six guy. So for Nylander, it's top six or bust, but he's just got too much talent. He's got too much upside where he might not quite be that top line guy like his brother's projecting to be, but he's a pretty good lock as a top six forward at the NHL level for me.
All right, so that's Alex Nylander, who you at HockeyProspect.com have ranked 12th, and Michael McLeod, they call him Mikey, at 19. So both of them in the team, so the gap might not be, and I don't know if you agree with what I'm about to say, but the thought maybe is that the difference between a guy in the late teens and the early teens might not be all that significant. So even though they're kind of separated in the rankings by seven or eight picks, it might be, hair's thread between these guys.
Definitely, and I think there are NHL teams out there that still have McLeod ahead of Nylander. I know there's kind of a mix here and there earlier on in the year. I think I would imagine more people would be leaning towards Nylander, but I think there are some people out there and some teams out there that might think that McLeod has more upside. So it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out between those two guys.
Let's move on to a couple of defensemen, and they're two of the high-end blue liners in this draft. Olli Juolevi of the London Knights and Mikhail Sergachev of the Windsor Spitfires. What do you like about these guys? What separates the two?
Yeah, they're both really, really close for us. I mean, I know we've talked about them a couple times this year, but part of the reason why I like keep continuing to talk about them is just because they're just so close together. I think ultimately the difference is preference, what type of defenseman you're looking for. So a guy like Juolevi, he's the type of guy that's going to find the guy up the ice. He's going to pass the two lines. He's going to find holes in the defense and exploit it. He's a very cerebral offensive type of defenseman. Whereas a guy like Sergachev, he'd rather have the puck on his stick and he wants to go up the ice. He wants to carry it. He's more of a possession guy than Juolevi is. Juolevi is the type of guy that's going to use his vision and his passing ability to move the puck up ice quickly, whereas Sergachev is the type of guy who's going to try and go end-to-end. He's got a fantastic shot. His wrist shot's very accurate. He's got a powerful slap shot, so he's very dangerous when he's got the puck in the offensive zone. And, I mean, this guy can score goals, so it depends on what type of team you have. If you have a lot of skilled forwards, you might be leaning towards a guy like Juolevi who can get the puck to those guys quickly and accurately. Whereas, you know, if you want a defenseman that's going to lead the rush a lot, Sergachev might be your guy because he's gonna want the puck on his stick a little more.
When it comes to the physical play between the two, I mean, are either one of them really a bruising kind of guy? I mean, Sergachev's bigger. He's 6'2", 6'3", and about 220, I'm told. Whereas Olli Juolevi isn't nearly that filled out, but do you consider either one of them to be big bangers?
I think Sergachev is. He's pretty physical in his own end. He likes to take the body. He likes to nail his guy when he's got the chance. Juolevi's more of a positional defensive guy, and it's taken him a little bit of time. I think earlier on in the year, Sergachev was hands down a better defensive defenseman than Juolevi was, because I felt like Juolevi was a little too passive and he was more of a positional guy. But as time's gone by, he's kind of learned how to handle that contact and be a little more aggressive defensively. He's never going to be a physical guy, but he's improved a lot in the defensive zone. I think Sergachev has kind of steadily improved. So I would give Sergachev the edge in the defensive zone just because he's got a little bit of that nasty edge to him, and he's a pretty good defender as well.
Both of these guys are elite and at the high end. Which guy are you taking if you're drafting and they're both available?
You know, that would be really tough depending on what team I am. I'll use the Edmonton Oilers as an example because they're drafting fourth. I think they might be the first team that might consider taking a defenseman in this draft. So I look at a team like the Oilers and you got so many talented players up front. I would think that they would lean towards a guy like Juolevi, who's going to feed those guys and advance the puck and move it well on the power play, who's going to sneak in and almost be like that fourth forward pinching in from the point because they've got so many guys that could find him sneaking in. And so I think he might be a little more well-suited guy because you'd need those guys to share the puck with Sergachev a little more because he wants to do a little more on his own. So using the Oilers as a comparison, a team that's got a bunch of good young forwards, I would take Juolevi in that situation because he's the type of guy who's going to feed the puck to those more talented guys and help them, allow them to create more plays.
Ryan Jesse from HockeyProspect.com is our guest right now. We're doing a couple of segments in a row with Ryan. We're going to pair some players up in this one and in the next segment as well and kind of go head-to-head and break them down and decide who we would draft if we had that power. The next, we're going to go with a couple more defensemen, Dante Fabbro and Jake Bean. Fabbro from the Penticton Vs and Jake Bean from the Calgary Hitmen. You guys have Fabbro 11 and Bean 15, so again, not a lot of separation between the two. And doing my prep work for our draft show on Friday, re-listening to Dante Fabbro's interview with us on the Pipeline show earlier this season, he really came across to me as North American Ole Ualevi, in the sense of what you described as, and he basically said it, my job is to get the puck to the forwards to let them do their job. You know, he's got a ton of assists this year, not a lot of goals. But it sounds like a guy who's, again, just that's what he does, gets the puck out of his zone and gives it to the forwards.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are pretty close. I like Fabro by an edge, even though Beans, I mean, he looks a little bit bigger than Fabro, but they're not that far off when you look at the listing. But Fabro is just so intelligent. I love his smarts. I remember the first time I saw him play was the under-17 tournament, and I always hear that reference of this kid plays in the BCHL. He's not playing against this tough of competition. He's not facing as strong a guy. And, you know, you always worry about that, but then you see him play in this tournament with all the best players in the world in his age group. He's playing against a ton of players who are playing the OHL, the WHL, and the Q, and he's noticeably one of the best players on the ice. His vision, his intelligence, his ability to read the play, and it's one of those things that hockey sense is so transferable at every level. You get a guy that's that smart, that can read the play. He can handle play at any level you throw him at. So that's why we're so high on a guy like Fabro, is he's so intelligent and he's so good offensively. What I like about Bean, he gets up the ice well and he's got a dangerous shot. It's a little bit like what I mentioned with Sergachev, where this guy's got a shot that finds its way through. He's dangerous in the offensive zone with the puck because he can put it in the net. So he's one of those guys where, again, we're almost kind of looking at a similar thing, where you got a guy like Bean that can put the puck on the net and he can get a little more done, whereas Fabro is going to use his intelligence to make the other players around him better.
Really quickly, before we get to the first break here between our two segments with you, Bean is a left-handed guy. Fabro is a right-handed guy. Does that factor in the rankings at all on draft day?
That's one of those things that might be a tiebreaker down the line if we're really having a tough time with them. It wasn't a factor in these two guys, but it can definitely play a factor in with a team that you don't have, if they don't have a lot of right-handed shots and they like both guys. That can sometimes play a factor because certain teams need those right-handed shots.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back with more with Ryan Jesse from HockeyProspect.com. And again, we're taking your thoughts into the Markson home inbox. What should the Oilers do at number four? Take Tkachuk, take Dubois. Maybe we'll talk about both of those guys in the next segment as well. Should they draft a defenseman? Or should they trade the pick? Let us know your thoughts in the Markson home inbox.
Fantasy Sports says, I'd pedal that pick hard. I think the Oilers take Tkachuk. I want Dubois.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Dean Millard and Guy Flaming on Edmonton's sports leader, TSN 1260.
Welcome back to The Pipeline Show. Guy Flaming, Dean Millard, Hernan Salas with you. Reminder, Fresh Fit Foods is an essential and convenient part of your weight loss plan, not a fad diet. They're your personal chef, your grocery shopper, and your nutrition coach all in one. Sign up for the 21-day challenge. Visit freshfitfoods.ca. Do it today. All right, let's continue on. We'll bring Ryan Jesse from HockeyProspect.com back for a second segment. Thanks for sticking around through the break, Ryan. Let's get right to another head-to-head comparison, and let's start right at the top. At least at that number four pick, and a lot of discussion in our city, whether it's Matt Tkachuk or Pierre-Luc Dubois, tell me who you would take and why. You have them ranked 4 and 5, Dubois one spot ahead of Tkachuk.
Yeah, this is another group of guys that we went back and forth on quite a bit, especially down the stretch with such a great finish by Matthew Tkachuk in the playoffs. Dubois, I think, he's a little bit bigger and he's a better skater. He's a little more on the edge type of guy. Dubois is a little more of a finisher, whereas Tkachuk is more of a setup guy. He's the type of guy that's going to make guys around him better. He's one of those pesky players that knows how to get under the opposition's skin. He was a guy in the playoffs who, you know, he took a couple too many bad penalties in the offensive zone, but the funny thing about Tkachuk is every time he did it early in the game, and he'd come back and he'd post 2 or 3 points a game. It was unbelievable. It was like every time he took one penalty, he scored 2 points. So he's the type of guy who was just a warrior in the playoffs. And so it was really tough between the two of them. Tkachuk has some of the best vision I've seen in the past few years, but a guy like Dubois is just such a hard worker. He's so competitive, and he's got so much skill. And I guess that's the thing that separates him is his work ethic, his speed, his size. But he has that skill where he's right on the same level as Tkachuk with the skill. So we give the edge to Dubois because he's bigger, he's tougher to play against, and he's got a bit more speed.
Who has the edge when it comes to physical play? I know both guys like to get a little bit dirty, but is Dubois the more physical player?
Yeah, during the game, I think Dubois is a little more of a physical player. I think Tkachuk's the type of guy who's going to mix it up in between whistles. He's going to do those little things. I think he's better at getting under the skin of the opposition after the whistles. But during the play, I think Dubois is a little bit more of a physical player.
All right, we've been debating that one for a while now, so let's move on to Clayton Keller. Now, this is a three-way one. Clayton Keller, Tyson Jost, and Kiefer Bellows. Keller and Bellows were teammates, line mates, and throw Jost into the mix. These are all three really highly offensive guys. HockeyProspect.com has Keller 9, Jost 10, and Kiefer Bellows down a little bit, down to 18, but he's a 50-goal guy, so there's lots to like about all three of these players.
Yeah, Keller and Jost are kind of those two small forwards in this draft that are going to get teams excited because of their high-energy play, their speed. Keller's a little bit more of a playmaker. I love the way he can control the puck. He can control the play right when he looks like he's out of options. He'll make a great play with the puck and keep the play going, or he'll keep possession and find the guy. He was a big reason why Bellows was able to get so many goals, because Bellows did a great job of finding where to go in the offensive zone. He knows how to slip into seams. He knows how to get open. And when he's got a guy like Keller out there feeding him the puck, Keller has excellent vision. He's a great playmaker, and he's so shifty, and he'll find ways to feed Bellows. And Bellows has such a powerful shot. He's very dangerous in the slot. But there are some questions with his skating and a little bit more of his play without the puck and sometimes, you know, his decision making when he's got the puck too long on a stick. So there were a few concerns, but Bellows has great upside. Jost is a guy who just, he finds a way to get it done. No matter what it is and what situation, this guy will find a way to make something happen. And that's kind of what's so exciting about this guy. And he's another guy who played against top-level talent and excelled at that level and seems to find ways to build chemistry with wherever he ends up playing.
Jost, do you get the same – do you hear the same things about Jost that you heard about Fabbro, that, oh, maybe he wasn't playing in the hardest league and then he goes to the U18s and just tears it up?
Yeah, and that's exactly it is. You hear that stuff again, like you always kind of want to factor in what level they're playing at, but when you take him to the under-17 tournament and he finds great chemistry with players, he's able to make plays, and he goes to the 18s and just tears it up in the tournament, where again, he's playing against the absolute best of his age group at that level. Like it really kind of wipes out that concern. Just kind of pushes it out of the way. It knocks it out. It's no longer a concern when he's doing that against the best players and with the best players who are in that age group who are playing at higher levels.
All right, let's go to the goaltenders. And interesting, because a lot of people, especially out west here, have Carter Hart as the number one guy, and he's actually number four for goalies for you and for HockeyProspect.com. It's Tyler Parsons from London, as well as Philip Gustafsson, the Swede, the top two goalies, and not separated by a whole lot. Gustafsson is a 35th, and Tyler Parsons 31, and then just for the listeners' benefit, Joseph Wohl of the U.S. program is 37, and then Carter Hart at 43. So not a lot of separation between all four of these goaltenders. But at the top, Parsons and Gustafsson, First off, why do you have them above the other two, and maybe compare both of these guys head-to-head?
Yeah, it's pretty close between those guys. I mean, one of the things with Carter Hart is he's just a little bit smaller than the other three, and I mean, that can be important with goaltenders. We see the majority of goaltenders that make it are between about 6'1 and a half and 6'4. So you want to be in that size range. So a guy like Carter Hart falls just under that. And I mean, we don't penalize him very much for it, but when you got four goaltenders that are that close, that's going to be one of those little things that when it's tight, you're going to give the edge to some of the bigger goaltenders. As far as Parsons and Gustafson at the top, they're kind of different goaltenders. Parsons is extremely athletic. He's one of the fastest goalies. I think he's the fastest goalie we've seen in the OHL since Malcolm Subban, and he ended up being a first round pick for Boston a couple of years back. His reflexes are outstanding. He makes plays where you think he's done, and he finds a way to make those saves. And I think he was really the unsung hero of that London team, because you had that top line of Tkachuk, Marner, and Dvorak just rolling through teams. I think sometimes what got lost in the mix, especially in the Niagara series, was the Ice Dogs got off to a quick start in game one and game two, and they were doubling the Knights in shots, and they just poured it on in the first maybe 20, 25 minutes of the game. If Parsons isn't standing on his head, that game might not be as close as it is, and that series might go later, and who knows what could have happened. But Parsons was just so difficult for them to beat, and he came up huge a lot in the playoffs, and we saw that at the Memorial Cup when they were tested there in the final. He played great. So a guy like Gustafson, on the other hand, he looks a little bit bigger. He's thicker than a Parsons, and he's one of those guys that's extremely positionally sound. He's always looks like he's in the right spot. It's kind of a polar opposite of Parsons, because he doesn't really have to rely on his reflexes nearly as much. And that's one of the things that really impressed me with him, is you get traffic in front of him, you get quick one-time passes, and he just always seems to be calmly getting into the right spot, moves well in the crease. He doesn't give up a lot of bad rebounds. He's learned that ability early on, and he's a decent goalie with the puck. So, I mean, all those traits, I think, make Gustafson really appealing. And it might just come down to what type of goaltender you're looking for.
Did he play on a poor team? Because he's easily got the worst numbers out of all four of these goaltenders that we've been talking about.
Yeah, that's the thing, is when you play out in the Swedish Junior League, I think his stats with he played a couple games with the men's team, and it's a little bit better. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's kind of like plus minus here. When you look at a highly ranked defenseman and he's got a minus 40, it might just be because he's playing on a terrible team or something like that. So sometimes that'll happen with these guys and stats if they're on a weak team, especially in like the Swedish Junior League.
On the flip side of that, Carter Hart played on a real defensive team. Do you factor that in when you look at different goaltenders and saying, you know, this guy's a good goaltender, but he played on an ultra-defensive team? Does that fact get factored in?
I think it counts sometimes when you're watching the games and they're just not getting tested as much. Sometimes you just got to end up watching the guys more because they don't get tested as much. Same thing with Parsons. I mean, the Knights D wasn't the most loaded D in the OHL, but they're a pretty solid defensive team. They're a very well-coached team. So, I mean, it was the same thing with Parsons. I mean, living in London, it was a little bit easier for me to see more than enough of Parsons to see him get tested as much. And that was kind of our challenge with Hart, was when he was playing against subpar teams, you know, it can be really tough to get a good read on those goaltenders.
Ryan Jesse from HockeyProspect.com, our guest right now, as we're getting you set up for the draft going on Friday. Still time to go get your black book copy, go through HockeyProspect.com, or is there a better way to do it, Ryan?
Well, if they want a hard copy of the book, you won't get it before the draft probably, but
right.
You can go to Amazon.com. We have a hard copy of our guide out there, or you can get the PDF copy on the website, and you'll get it right away.
Right on. Okay, Ryan, before we let you go, I'm going to ask you for some of your own personal sleeper picks, maybe guys that are late second or fourth or even sixth or seventh round guys that you think might be under the radar that could pan out long term? Are there two or three guys that come to mind?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple guys that I've really liked this year. This year, there's been some guys that I've really felt have got a little underrated. I'll start with Boris Kachuk, who enters our top 10, or sorry, our first round, but I'm not sure if he's going to go in the first round. The kid broke his, I believe he broke his nose going into the Sarnia series in the first round of the playoffs. Played with a full cage and just played with relentless work ethic. He won every battle. He's that player that wants the puck real bad, worse than anybody else on the ice. And then when he gets it, he finds a way to make plays happen. So he's the type of guy who I've just been a real fan of his game, his work ethic, his compete level, and then he's got the skill to make things happen. So I think he might be one of those guys that you don't hear a lot of leading up to the draft, but I'm a huge fan of this kid, just his compete and his skill. And then a little further down, you look at a guy like Connor Hall from the Kitchener Rangers. I had the benefit of watching this kid play with the Cambridge Hawks in his AAA year and minor midget. So I got a bit of a head start. I get a bit of a head start with some of these guys with our OHL draft coverage. Hall was one of those guys who I liked going into the season, but he didn't get much of a chance in the first couple months and then broke his jaw. But he really settled in with the Rangers and played a top-pairing defensive role down the stretch, which is extremely difficult for a rookie with limited experience. And he did a fantastic job of it and moved on to the under-18. And he was a guy who I really liked, and I wonder what was going to happen with him. And now that he's got this extra experience, I think teams are going to be a lot more confident in picking this guy up. And then my third guy on the list would be a guy like Jordan Sambrook, plays for the Erie Otters. He played major midget last year with the Toronto Nationals. He's one of those late bloomers, but he's got size. I believe he's 6'2". He makes smart decisions going up the ice. He's a two-way defenseman. He's able to put the puck in the net. He can create offense, but he's also tough defensively. He's tough to get around. You know, he had a couple hiccups, especially in the playoffs. I thought, you know, he had a couple moments where he struggled, but you got to remind yourself, this is the first year this kid played junior. He was playing, you know, AAA a year ago, and then he's in the playoffs making some big plays. And the growing pains can kind of be difficult for these young guys. But you look at the projection of a kid like that, and I think he's got a lot of upside.
Excellent rundown, Ryan. We really appreciate it tonight and throughout this past season as well. Looking forward to doing it again next year with you guys, and looking forward to Friday night as well.
Yeah, it's been great. I really appreciate you guys having me on all season, and it's a bit of a party this weekend. We get to relax. We don't have to do any scouting. We can just enjoy the draft and enjoy talking with people and just see how it all unfolds.
Exactly. Thanks for this, Ryan.
Hey, thank you.
You bet.